Did you have a substitute this morning?
I am a substitute. Well, I was going to be on when? August.
Yeah, you're going to be in August, and we're going to have Lloyd Bennett. But Lloyd was, I understand, washing his car, and the water froze, and he decided to do some ice skating. Broke a couple of ribs.
Broke two ribs.
So he and our illustrious friend here decided between them that they would swap around.
So we got a second choice, did we?
He got the second choice, that's right. That's right.
He was going to be in August.
I was going to be in August.
Yeah. Okay, Reverend Graham Morrison. Thank you.
Thank you. My wife Margie and I had dinner last night with Lloyd and Isabel, because Isabel was having a birthday. So with some of their grandkids, we were around at their place. But no, he fell over on the area out the front of his house and broke two ribs. So thank you, Steve. Thank you, gentlemen. It is good to be here, and I should take my watch off so I can keep looking at the time. Who am I? I'm Graham Morrison. I have spent my life in education. I started off, my first job was with the Sydney Morning Herald, I must say, in advertising. And I studied for the matriculation in the evening. I left school early. Did anyone ever see that? It was on TV for some time, Heartbreak High.
Yep.
I went to Heartbreak High. I can say that. My kids find it funny that their dad can say that, but I did, because Heartbreak High was filmed at Maroubra Bay High after it closed down as a school. So I went to Heartbreak High. That was my school. So thank you for having me here. I was married to Jan for 22 years. Jan died in 1998. And I could go on and tell you stories about all that area too. And I'm now married to Margie. Margie and I have been married 13 years. Margie comes from a property out of Gunnedah. So we spent a bit of time on the farm at Gunnedah after we were married. So I've got two kids, Margie's got three, and between us we've got 12 grandchildren. And we have,
like the
Brady Bunch, something like that. Most of them are in Sydney. Oh no, actually three of them are in Japan. My son's in Osaka, and the other is in Brisbane. But after Jan died, Margie's husband died of motor neurone disease. My wife died of Hodgkin's disease, which turned into leukemia. And if ever there was something that sticks in my mind, is somebody's spirit leaving their body. I was with Jan at the time. I wasn't going to leave St. Vincent's Hospital. I lived there day and night for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And Jan's spirit left her body at 1:13 on the 27th of August in 1998. And I was very aware of that. So whenever I sing that wonderful old song, Rock of Ages Cleft for Me, when my eyelids close in death, you know, when I soar through realms unknown, I can just picture that, because that's what happens, I think. That's what happens, I was sure, with Jan. So I grew up in Kensington in the eastern suburbs, attended Maroubra Bay High. This is just a bit of background to me. And I was in advertising at the Sydney Morning Herald, and I studied full-time at the University of New South Wales, and then I studied part-time to get a master's degree, a research degree at University of New England.
Where were you born?
I was born in Sydney, Marrickville. Marrickville. Bethesda Hospital in Marrickville.
Tell me, what were you studying
there? I studied economics, a dismal science. At UNSW. One of the jobs that I really enjoyed, which was a part-time job, and I'd love to go back to it again, and your anger Billy calls to me now and again, I was a guide at Janolan Caves part-time for 10-odd years, casual job, and did a lot of caving and had the joy of exploring and discovering a cave, digging into it. But that could be another story. I love skiing, started skiing in these mountains here in 1965, and I think it's true to say, as a bloke who was our executive director for INF, which I'll tell you about in a minute, I came to the mountains because the mountains called me, the scenery of the mountains, and then the people came into perspective, if you get my drift. So it's the mountains that sort of, and I still enjoy the mountains, don't get on, don't make, take me wrong, but the people in the on the Monero came into perspective. So here I find myself only 4 years ago or so being ordained in the Anglican Church, never ordained before that. That was a bit of a change of gear and a change of pace. So 1973, I did an extensive trek to Nepal. Lots of people call it Nepal, you can call it what you like, but the Nepalese call it Nepal. And I did an extensive trek, walking 180 kilometres, climbed a peak called Kalapatar. And I guess the rest is history. When I came back, that was before I was married to Jan. The man who married us at St Clement's Mossman, Ray Weir, was then chairman of the board of INF, and he invited me to join the board. So my time with the International Nepal Fellowship started in 1976, I guess you could say, and I stepped down from being chairman of the international organisation of that only 18 months ago. So when they asked me up on the stage in Nepal in Pokhara 18 months ago to sort of say thank you, to give me a little thing, I suddenly thought, I've been involved with this organisation for 40 years. The penny dropped, 40 years. And I hadn't sort of thought about that before. So I taught at, I went to Moore College a long time ago. I taught at St Andrew's Cathedral School, before that Blacktown Boys. I was on the staff of Blacktown Boys. And then I went to St Andrew's Cathedral School, Barker College, and then Blue Mountains Grammar School, where I was deputy and then head. So I think that's enough of me. My wife Margie is a lay minister in the parish here, parish of Berrydale, not here, there, of Berrydale and Snowy Mountains, and it's so good to have Warren, who's the chair of our parish council. One little thing before I do go on to Nepal, and that is that we are very excited, and I haven't got to talk to you, sir, about all this, what's happening. We've got some interviews coming up in Sydney, and Warren, you can hear this now for the first time. Second time. You've heard it. In Sydney for a very exciting position. There's going to be a chaplaincy position out of Jindabyne to build the church and to do a push into Threadbow and Perisher, which is currently there, but somebody full-time to work in that hedonistic, hard-nosed, we live there so I can speak like this, town of Jindabyne. It's a very different place. So that's going to start fairly soon, and interviews for this position are on track for Monday week. Brian and I will be in Sydney. It's very exciting, so please pray for that, because it will be a full-time position. BCA, Bush Church Aid, if you don't know the organisation, started, an Anglican organisation started, and this man here used to be the CEO of BCA years ago, Brian. And BCA started on the Monero 100 years ago when a bloke by the name of Kirkby got off the train at Nimity Bell because the line to Bombala was being built, and he got on a horse and went around proclaiming the gospel and trying to get Christian groups together. So 100 years on, here we are. We applied for a centenary grant for BCA and were successful in getting it. Otherwise, this ministry initiative up there wouldn't get legs. So that's very exciting. It's an amalgam between the Diocese of Canberra and Goulburn and BCA. So that's enough of that, I think. Let me go on. If you want to stop me any time, education's my background. I'm very content with kids putting up their hands and saying, I want to go to the toilet, or whatever. So if you want to say something, do, please. Old kids probably go to the toilet more often, don't they? The school I was at, Blue Mountains Grammar, was a kindergarten to year 12 school, which is, I think that concept is great, you know, having the full range of kids together. Mm-hmm. It's very good. So
can I just ask how that new ministry is going to fit with the existing, you know, Anglican parish?
It's above it. It's a totally different scene. It's above, the parish will go on as it is, right. But Jindabyne Anglican Church is almost on its knees, if not on its knees. It's a very hard place for the gospel. In many ways it's similar to the eastern suburbs where I grew up. The eastern suburbs of Sydney is a very hard place for the gospel. And Jindabyne's like that. Berridale, where Warren is living, is I wouldn't say easier, but you've got a good corpus of people, haven't you, that regularly meet, 20, 25, 30 people of a Jindabyne. So it's above the parish, and it works as a chaplaincy unit to build the church in Jindabyne with relevant services that appeal to the hard-nosed culture that's around. Yeah.
Is there a minister there at the moment?
No. The only paid clergyman in that part of the world is the Catholic priest. Peter Miller's paid. There was an AOG man, he's gone. There was a Uniting Church man, he's gone. There was an Anglican man, he's gone. The Baptist closed up. So Jindabyne is hard going. And Satan is alive and well, as we were talking about. So please pray for Jindabyne. And it's kingdom work, as well as building the local church, because there are so many people that come through. Now, having said that, sorry, I've been going for a long time. Having said that, where we work in Perisher, we get usually 50 or so people a Sunday, because that's the highest church building in Australia, and people just love to come. I often have to dig out the front door, seriously, and tomorrow we'll be there. My wife's preaching tomorrow at Perisher. And then we run a service in Jindabyne Anglican called Sunday at 6, where we get 10, 15 people come and trying to build that up. But Perisher, people love to come. Yep. So if you're up in the mountains, come and see us. That's in winter, from June through to the first weekend in October. Yeah. Stop me if you want to ask anything, please. So Nepal, you probably heard the expression namaste. Namaste is not a comment that Christians usually use. We use the word jaimasi, because namaste essentially means greetings to the God within you. So it's in that sense pagan. Namaste means greeting. You all have a God, so Hindus say. So when you greet somebody with the words namaste, you're actually saying, you're looking past the person and saying greeting to the God which has taken up residence in you. But Christians say jaimasi, and that means praise be to Jesus. Now, in Nepal, which is a little country, and I went there, as I said, in 1973, it's geologically active. The Himalayas are going up, and you may recall, of course, 2015, Anzac Day, our Anzac Day, 25th of April, there was a massive earthquake, 7.8 on the Richter scale, and a lot of people died, over 11,000 people died. I wasn't there at the time, I got there some 3 weeks afterwards, and the place was in absolute chaos. You've always got to look at the funny side of these things. Our office in Pokhara, where I was conducting a board meeting, was okay, the building was alright. But I've never conducted a meeting like this, because I was sitting there at the end of the table, we had our board, and suddenly the alarm went off. It was the earthquake alarm. Now, I'd never heard an earthquake alarm before, but they're very sensitive to movement. And as I was sitting there, and I didn't know what this was, but there was about 12 sitting around the table. Some bolted for the door, some went under the table, and I sat there wondering, you know, why are these people doing this? But it was because of the tremors that came afterwards. So that was 2015. The mountains are going up, and it is still a geologically active area. So you are the odd person out in Nepal if you don't believe in evil spirits, really and truly. It is a land of hills and valleys, but it used to be called the world's only Hindu kingdom. But it's not a kingdom anymore, because the king met his end, untimely end, in 2001. You may remember that, with the massacre in the palace in Kathmandu, and I was there in June. That happened on June the 1st. I was there a little bit after that because I've come and gone to Nepal many times. And what happened on that occasion was the king, in Hindu culture, is considered to be a god. And he and his family, the queen and the family and all the heirs and successors, on this particular night were having a get-together in the palace ballroom. I visited the palace. You can now go into the palace. Now it's now open. They were having a get-together in the palace ballroom, and the son, this is King Birendra, the son who had been on drugs and was a bit of a loose cannon, you might say. He'd taken up a romance with an Indian magnate's daughter. This bloke, this woman, was the daughter of the magnate who owned Tata, if you know the Tata machinery, and very wealthy girl, a very wealthy family, and he'd taken up a love affair with this girl, and the Queen Mother didn't like this at all. This is so the story goes. If you want conspiracy theories, they're alive in Nepal as well as anywhere else. But the son of the king had been on drugs, and he'd had enough of this. Apparently there'd been fights between him and the family, so he went to the palace armoury, and there were no guards on duty that night because the king had said, it's just our family getting together in the ballroom. And he went to the palace armoury, got a rifle of some sort, shot his father cold blood in the palace ballroom. And if he had have stopped then, he would have been king and above the law, because the king cannot be sentenced. He's above the law. So if he had have stopped only with his father being killed, that would have been it. He would have taken on the job. But he mowed down his mother and most of the other people in the palace ballroom, and then he turned the gun on himself. And in good Nepali, quaint humour, well, it's not really humour, is it? When you visit the palace these days, they've got signs. There's a mark over there on the wall, and a sign says, bullet hole, this is where King died. And so there's a little plaque there and so on. So that's a bit of background. It's still a Hindu Buddhist country, but the Christian church is growing at one of the fastest rates on the planet. Seriously, the Christian gospel has just taken off in Nepal. I've had the privilege of speaking at quite a few churches in Nepal, and it is a great privilege. How did the Christian church get started? Well, it got started by the organisation that I've been working with for years called INF. INF started back in 1952 when six ladies, gutsy women, in 1952 believed, and they were Poms, believed that God would have them go into this little country of Nepal and start a work there. Because up till that point in time, nobody could get in. It was a closed country. You couldn't get in. And so they waited on the border in India, because they could get into India, of British control. They waited and prayed for years, waiting and praying for years on the Indian border, and then came the opportunity with an invitation from the king to go in. And they walked for some hundreds of kilometres to a little town, as I'm saying, 1952, country of Nepal. I mean, it's primitive now. Imagine what it was like then. And they walked and they set up a hospital called the Shining Hospital. Still there today. And they started the work of INF as a medical work because the place was in terrible state. So the church came out of that. And Ramgat Church, which is a very vibrant big church in Pokhara, the second city of Nepal, is still going. I've been there many times, and that's how the church in Nepal started. And it's flourishing. The gospel is just flourishing in Nepal. If you want to find some excitement in a service, go to a Nepali church service where the men sit on one side, the women on the other, which is the culture. And then when it comes time to pray, they all pray out loud together. I encourage you to do it sometime. You just got hundreds of people and they just start. And you've got this, some in English, some in Nepali, some in whatever else. And they're just all praying out loud. And it's just quite an amazing event to hear. So the country of Nepal is strategically between China and India. That is good, that is bad. They are both courting the country, China particularly, trying to push into the land and building all sorts of things. And India on the other side, Mahendra, whatever his name is, the new bloke in India who just got re-elected, Modi is pushing in to have more of a Hindu influence in that country of Nepal. So
Gordon Russell is in Nepal.
Gordon Russell, I know.
Yeah, he was an engineer in the Snowy, so he has a connection.
Yeah, I know Gordon Russell. Gordon and Ruth.
Yeah,
Ruth is currently into, his wife is a doctor, and she's currently into palliative care. And we being INF, have just built the first palliative care hospital in Nepal. Yep, he's a good bloke. Tell you something funny about that. When I visited one of the projects that we're building in Nepal only a short time ago, there were all these Nepali workers, you'd appreciate this, fellas, without any shoes on a construction site. Hard hats, but no shoes. And I said to Gordon, what's with this? And he made the obvious comment that these fellas have been used to watching where they walk. They don't need hard shoes. Now, of course, you could say things might fall on their feet. But he said, they watch where they walk. They take care. If you put shoes, they wouldn't be used to shoes. So here's this big construction site with all these blokes walking around bare feet and hard hats. So anyway, it's a land about the size of Victoria. And it's got about 30 million people. However, about 10 million of those are out of the country. It's got the largest diaspora out of the country that you can imagine. It's got the world's tallest mountain, Sagarmatha Chomolungmu Everest, 8848 metres. And that's about enough. So we work in the country of Nepal with TB work, leprosy work, community aid and development work, women's work, self-help groups, and some amazing things are happening. We work particularly from the point of view of holistic ministry, body, mind and spirit. We work in the western part. When I say we, I've stepped down from the board, but I still say that. We work in the western part of the country, which is the most, pardon me, the most disadvantaged. Nepal is 149 on the United Nations most livable countries. Australia is number 3. So if anyone ever complains in Australia about being hardly done by, can you please tell them it really isn't all that bad? Now, I know some people have a hard time, but hard times are relative, and Nepal is 149 on the United Nations most livable countries in the world. The first one on that list is Norway, second one is Switzerland, third one is Australia, and the United States and Britain are down at about 12 or 13. So we're up there with the best, and probably Cooma and the Monero would be up there even higher again. So the Christian church is growing very fast. TB leprosy work. TB in the country of Nepal, 50% of Nepalis carry the TB bug. 50%. Of Nepalis carry the TB bug. It's multi-drug resistant now, and that's a major problem with TB. 10% of that 50% go on to get TB, and that's a big problem in the country. Leprosy, according to the World Health Organization, has been stamped out, but that's because there's fewer than 1%, I think they say, less than that, it's not there. But if you happen to be the poor coot that's got leprosy, stats don't mean much, do they? I've visited people with leprosy, and I can tell you, fellas, One of the things I remember doing, and it really struck me, I went to one Green Pastures Hospital, our hospital, there were all these people sitting around with leprosy. And I felt compelled, I don't say this to boost myself up, but I'll tell you, I felt compelled to touch them. And I went around to these people sitting on beds, you know, and I said, you know, good on you, mate, you know, that sort of thing. And because I know that leprosy can be cured. If I happen to catch it, I know it can be cured. But the worst thing we can do in life is not to touch people and to treat them as if they're lepers. So for me, it was really a very moving moment, going around just putting a hand on these people or touching them, you know, and saying, you know, we'll help you, we'll do something, we'll pray for you. So, a couple of minutes to go. We made a decision some years ago to change our organisation from being controlled by expatriates to being controlled by Nepalis. 2005 that happened, and there comes a time in any organisation when you've got to trust other people to run it. And that was a big decision for us, because the organisation had been run by expatriates for years, and we put in a board of godly Nepali men and women, and they are doing a great job. I think that's probably about... Oh, well, the other things I'll just say briefly is that we've got a site in Pokhara which has God given a leprosy hospital used to be there, as I said. We're now branched out into bigger things with a centre of excellence for spinal injuries. One of the reasons for that is that there are a lot of spinal injuries in Nepal because there's terraces, you know, where people grow rice and terraces. People fall out of trees, cutting limbs off to get wood for firewood and get spinal injuries. So we've set up this spinal injuries hospital, Green Pastures, headed up by a bloke called Deepak Maharan, and he is a world-class Nepali spinal surgeon. And this hospital has come with money, built with money from people in around the world, and it's state-of-the-art. You know, he got a country who's 149 on the United Nations Most Livable Places, and Gordon Russell was built this place with the team, it's got air conditioning, it's got operating theatres and all the rest of it, and a state of the art stuff. And we changed our way of doing things as far as getting money, because getting money from not for profit organisations is getting harder and harder with competition. We used to get lots of money from the Bill Gates Foundation, you know, the Microsoft bloke, from governments and so on, AusAid from Australia, but that's been getting harder. So we've changed our tack now, and we, in this particular hospital, charge people who can afford to pay so that they subsidise people who can't. And I like that model. So if you happen to be ill in Nepal and you want to go to a first-rate hospital, you come to INF and we charge you. You can have a room with a colour television and we charge you. And with the money we get from people who we charge, we help those poor people who can't afford anything. So, gentlemen, thank you. That's a bit of a ramble through my world and through Nepal. I could go on for a long time. It's a land of hills and valleys, and I haven't been back for 12 months, and it's about time to go back again. Nepalis are very soft. You will have met them here. Have you met Nepalis in Kuma? In the bank? There are lots around. They're very soft people, very kind, very caring, the Christian church is an absolute model for us, and I think the time is coming where we need some Nepali pastors to come over here and evangelise us rather than going the other way. So thank you.